Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 91 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to begin in entertainment talk, covering some Disney Plus news and other streaming services. Netflix finally releases some numbers on how well their original movies are doing. And then we'll also go over to tech news with a quick follow-up to the Data Dividend Project, some robots flipping burgers. And then in hacking news, we've got the big Twitter hack, as well as some foreign government hacks. There's a lot to get to, so we'll get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and welcome back to episode 91. And we can, I guess, begin this week, entertainment talk, and get started with Disney Plus announcing some upcoming shows, some delays. There's some rumors, all kinds of things going on with the Disney Plus slate here.
Yeah, you kind of seen these coming, didn't you? COVID's been wrecking shop on everything. It was bound to do some damage with our upcoming shows and whatnot. So this isn't really surprising. It's still depressing as shit, but it's really not surprising at this point.
Yeah, you know, whether it comes from the delays because of production delays. So we've got the Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is being delayed because they just haven't finished filming. And then COVID just put a halt to production. And I still think there's probably more to this. There was also rumors that came out this last week about WandaVision being delayed, and then Disney came back and said, no, it's still going to come out in 2020, but there's a lot of rumors about it getting pushed back. And I tend to think there's got to be some truth to it. When the movie slate we know has been pushed back with Black Widow, I think the Multiverse of Madness for next year is still not.
Well, anything that is not yet in production is for sure pushed back. I think Eternals and Black Widow were the only things that were like in the works when COVID hit. So those were the only two that I think would actually could have released on time. But after that, some of these movies barely even started shooting, if they even started shooting. And if that's the case, they're for sure half a year behind schedule.
You know, all these movies and shows are somewhat coupled together. If one goes out of sequence, it's going to give up something in the other, and they're going to stick to their timeline. So if the movies look like they're going to be delayed, they're going to start delaying these shows. They're going to have no choice but to delay it, even outside of production reasons, just for the timing reasons. They're going to have to find a whole new way forward.
Like, I'm going to get really frustrated too, just because they're showing Black Widow to all the NBA players at Disney World. It's like one of the things that they're doing to keep them happy, as if making millions of dollars playing a sport isn't good enough. So they're releasing that to everybody in the Disney World bubble. And there's already leaks. I want to say that you can find a copy of the movie online. And if that's the case, it's only going to be a matter of time before every asshole gets their hands on it. And now, like, I don't want to watch it a bootleg version on a Fire Stick. Like, I want to watch it in the theater like I always do. I want to write a review on it like I always do. And, you know, with the theaters being shut down and Disney Plus not wanting to release it on Disney Plus, I feel like it's only a matter of time before it gets ruined for the audience viewers like myself.
Yeah, I can imagine there's like a, you know, Steph Curry in there with a camcorder just recording it and releasing it on bootleg.
I know, it's like out of the people in there, you know, whose shithead 15-year-old son is bootlegging this movie as if daddy doesn't have 5 Maybachs in his fucking garage, you piece of shit.
Yeah, but he wants to be the cool one that gets it to all his friends who aren't in the bubble.
Yeah, asshole. So COVID just becomes more annoying by the minute, I swear. It's just like, I can't do this much longer. They need to get on this vaccine or something, because I want to go to a movie. I don't want to quit having, you know, and everyone's like, oh, this is, you know, first world problems. Like, really? Is Black Widow getting leaked ruining your life? Yes. Yes. It is ruining my life.
Unfortunately, okay, for everybody here, I live in a fucking first world, so they are my problems.
You know, I write movie reviews, right? There's a lot of other movie podcasters that we're friends with. This is definitely throwing monkey wrenches in everybody's shit. So for all you Karens out there, quit. Yeah, it's ruining my life. Take it or leave it. I don't give a shit.
Well, you still might get, you know, maybe some new shows. You know, I don't know if you're excited about Star Wars The Bad Batch. It was announced it'll come early in 2021, which is going to be another animated Star Wars series following up. Was it The Clone Wars that follows?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm willing to give it a shot. You know, the word on the street is Kathleen Kennedy's out. So I'll take anything post-Kennedy.
I feel like that's been on the street for a long time.
Yeah, but I can't remember who posted it, but I mean, she can't survive the last 3 years of just horrible Star Wars features. Like, she can't survive that.
you've got to assume that she's out, but the fact that it hasn't happened swiftly lends you to believe that, I don't know, nobody knows what's going on in those rooms.
I mean, like, and everyone... It's funny because, I mean, you want more women in Hollywood and stuff like that. And if they don't fire her just to appease the you know, biased sex numbers of gender in movies, like, this is a huge loss. Like, hire another woman for all I give a shit. But this lady's trash. Like, and if she gets to keep her job after The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, if that ain't privilege, I don't know what is. fire that woman. She is trash.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't have any big wins on her side coming. You know, there's not much good in the last couple of years coming out of Star Wars. So you gotta, it'd be tough. You know, Kevin Feige would have been fired long ago if he completely derailed the Marvel MCU.
Yeah, I mean, you got Favreau doing great things. You know, that, like, just hire somebody that truly loves the property. There's enough people out there that were born in the mid-70s that are in their 50s and 60s now that have plenty of film experience that absolutely love Star Wars that would not just come in and shit on the franchise. Find that person. Give them a job. Like, it's not that complicated.
Yeah, well... Either way, we got a new animated series coming. We know that the Star Wars movie slate is eventually coming. You know, we don't know exactly what it is, but we also have Mandalorian. Yeah, soon-ish.
Thank God they finished production on that before COVID. Because if Mando would have got pushed, fuck. Like, I need something to look forward to. A lot of people don't realize, like, we are going to come to an entertainment drought in the next couple months. You know, everything that is filmed and shot and in the can, they've pushed out. Like, we have very little left that they're going to make. So even as we've pushed some movies back, we've pushed some TV shows back, with the streaming and everything, we'll pound through those really fast. And then we are going to have this lull of, like, from November to next spring, where there just ain't shit produced new and being posted. Like, it's just going to be this endless drought while we're just locked in our house while it's negative 30 degrees out. And I'm going to be pounding out old episodes of fucking Night Court or some shit. It's going to be fucking brutal.
I like how Night Court was on the tip of your tongue there.
The show was fucking great.
It was great. I could use a break of new content. Just let me get caught up for the last 6 years.
Fucking lemming. You live under a rock. So, yeah, you got tons of shit you can fucking catch up on. But people like me who are sitting here waiting for Handmaids and Miss Maisel and all these other great shows to come back, like, oh, I'm fucked, bro. I'm fucked.
Well, we move on to the next story, which is interesting. You know, there was did you ever watch 30 Rock?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 30 Rock was a great show when it was running. It was definitely something I watched for years. And they were supposed to have, or they filmed their reunion episode.
Oh, it aired.
And it aired.
You didn't watch it? I watched it.
Of course I didn't watch it. But it aired both on streaming services, and it aired on just, you know, over-the-air TV, local NBC networks. And there were many big markets that did not have access to watch the 30 Rock reunion here.
So yeah, I caught wind of this and I thought it was kind of bogus. You know, I thought it was another fight of the streaming wars that's going to be happening with traditional cable and these streaming services. And after watching the 30 Rock reunion, I kind of see why the TV stations didn't air it. It was a straight half hour or hour. I turned it off halfway through because I couldn't take it anymore. It was a straight Peacock infomercial. like they paid all these 30 Rock stars big money to just brand the shit out of Peacock. Like even the advertisements when they went to commercial were just Peacock commercials. No one was selling fucking Tide in the middle of this shit. There was no Papa John's fucking commercial. It was just straight up like, check out this new streaming service with all your favorite shows and da 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 da. The one funny thing I did think of is that even the 30 Rock people were able to poke a little fun at Peacock because they were in the show. They had like in-show branding, like, and so they're talking about Peacock in the 30 Rock fucking show, even, you know. And it, at one point, Liz Lemon's like, yeah, it's got all your favorite NBC shows like Office, Parks and Rec, and Fret. And she went to say Friends, and they were like, no, not that one. But yeah, it was like, so if it was just like a regular 30 Rock show, I have to assume that some of these station heads got a preview of the episode and realized that it was nothing but a shot across the bow of traditional cable in trying to get people away from their cable boxes and into the streaming service. So they were like, yeah, fuck you. We're not going to participate in this shit.
Well, and that's what the interesting part of it to me is, that obviously it just shows that, you know, the NBC affiliates, even in these major markets, they really are dissatisfied with the direction that all the NBC, and they have to be, right? Like, their business model is selling, you know, getting ratings through regular TV and selling ads. And now, you know, Peacock comes, NBC thinks, oh, well, you're a part of the NBC family. Why don't we'll all bask in the glory of this. Like, no, we don't get a piece of that. And when you air new episodes within 24 hours of us putting it on TV, nobody's going to watch it. Almost nobody was watching stuff in real time anyway in the TiVo DVR era, but at least that still counted as ratings for them. Now, if they don't even need to do that and they can just go jump on it, Peacock, and watch it for free streaming within 24 hours, well, TV's dead.
Well, I do see a large subset of viewers not switching to Peacock even with that day after airing. So you get Peacock free in a certain aspect. Then it's $4.99 to unlock all of Peacock's content, but with commercials. And then it's $9.99 or $8.99, something like that, to have Peacock's full content with no commercials.
You sound like somebody who's watched a 30-minute commercial about it.
Yeah. I watched 30 Rock, motherfuckers. So if you want no commercials, you have to pay $10 to Peacock, and you can only watch it a day after. But if you have a Comcast cable DVR box, you can record the show, watch it an hour later, and fast forward through the commercials. So if you hate commercials like many people do, you still may just record your favorite show on your DVR, watch it at your leisure, and fast forward through the commercials rather than give Peacock $10 and not have to hit that double F button on your fucking remote.
Yeah, if that's still, you know, if you've got that option available to you. But the problem is this just encourages more people to do cord cutting and just get away from that cable model in the first place.
Yeah, but like, I cut the cord, but now I'm getting so heavy into the amount of money I pay on streaming services that it's almost not worth it anymore.
Yeah, but if you go back to TV, you're still going to be paying the streaming services because the original content that is provided to the streaming service. It's actually getting to a point that the original content on TV is more accessible online than the online content is elsewhere. Right? You can't get access to any of the online streaming services stuff unless you're part of the streaming service. But we can watch the shows that are broadcasting on TV through the various streaming services. So you almost have no choice but to go the streaming route.
Yeah, it's really weird how this is all going to play out. Like, it's Comcast and Time Warner and them, they're going to lose money for sure. Like, it's, there's not a doubt, you know, but are they going to be profitable? Yes. You know, like, they've been the titans for how long? Like, this this is them. It's not like Peacock's going to put them out of business. They just, like, this is that corporate greed where they want all the monies and not some of the monies, to where it's like, I can't feel sorry for that. Like, I, you know, especially after how bad they've been raping people for decades, just decades. You know what I mean? And now providers have come up with a different alternative to give viewers more convenience, more options, make it more profitable to the people who actually make the shows. You know, because that's another thing too, is NBC is the one paying the writers, the actors, the producers, the grips, the, you know what I mean? Like, Comcast ain't paying for that shit, you know? No. So, like, should we feel bad that Comcast is getting cut out of this? I don't feel bad.
No, I don't care at all. And, I'm still looking,
I feel bad that I have 9 fucking $10 subscriptions. Like, that's what I feel bad about.
Yeah, we're still, we're less than 2 years away from hopefully Starlink internet rolling out. And then that puts the whole Comcast, Cox, Time Warner monopolies that they carved up the country completely at jeopardy, because across the country, they're going to have competition they're going to have to deal with. Whereas, like, where I'm at, the only broadband internet is Cox. That's it. It's the only choice I have. Well, that goes away. So hopefully, hopefully.
I mean, and at least you have one option. You know, there's plenty of places in this country that have zero options. Like, it still blows my mind that there are people in the heartland of America using dial-up. It's insane. You know, they show pictures of, like, the local McDonald's all the time, like, just people flooding the parking lots of McDonald's so they can, you know, do homework and stream their shows off McDonald's's Wi-Fi. Like, it's insane that people are resorting to that. And we're sitting here complaining, you know, talking about streaming services and losing the money on that. Like, I honestly want the government just to provide a basic internet service for the entire country, and fuck Comcast on the other end too. Double fist those fuckers. I don't give a shit.
All right. Well, moving on from double fisting, and we'll go over to an interesting story that, you know, we talk all the time here about what these numbers are for movies and these film debuts that happen on Netflix. Nobody ever knows. And Netflix finally released some data as far as what their total view counts are within the first 4 weeks of a lot of their original content movies coming up. And I think it's about on par where I thought it would be. You know, we were looking at, none of them are over 100 million views. There wasn't a single film that
is that the benchmark, though?
Like, I don't know. How many people go see a movie, a real movie? And
I think they're basing it off, like, YouTube, like, videos. You know, how many people watch a YouTube video, but, like, that's like a 3 minute to 20 minute video. Yeah. Who's watching? What 2 hour video has 100 million hits on YouTube where they actually watch it all the way through? I don't know.
Yeah. And I guess I don't really know. You know, we talk about, you know, box office releases in the realm of, you know, it made $1 billion or 700 million or, you know, whatever the movie was. How many views does that equal? Less than 100 million.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if my calculator can hold that many zeros. Just divide it by 15 bucks on average, and that's what you got.
Yeah, and you know, so it'll come. It's definitely less than 100 million views. So, you know, I expected maybe Netflix to be a little higher than what you would expect to see in the theater, but this is about on par where I thought it'd be.
And the movies on the list aren't that surprising either, just based on meme culture. You kind of seen these coming, you know?
Yeah. You know, that Extraction movie hit 99 million. I was one of them. I actually watched that movie when it first came out.
Yeah, I watched it.
It was entertaining.
Yeah. For the cost? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, Bird Box, of course, is up there.
That's when I protested. That's when I protested. I still haven't watched that movie.
Why?
I don't know. it was one of those weird, like, protest movies that, like, everybody was talking about Bird Box and the premise.
Were you just mad that everybody was finally talking, like, was talking about Sandra Bullock like she hasn't been alive for the last, making movies for the last 20 years?
The premise just really didn't, like, speak to me. You know, it was like the, the opposite version of A Quiet Place, and I love the quiet A Quiet Place. And I was just like, oh, so now we're gonna do the blind version. Now we gonna do the blind version.
You should watch Bird Box.
Yeah, maybe
it's good. It's good. It's definitely different than A Quiet Place.
Yeah, they can't see rather than hear.
Yeah, but the bad guy in it is a completely different concept than Quiet Place. But whatever. If you haven't watched it, you probably won't. Some of these other movies, they're all ones that I would expect. They paid big bucks to Mark Wahlberg to do an action movie. It drew a lot of people to watch it. Ryan Reynolds. It just confirms that
they gave a shit ton of money to Adam Sandler. People are going to watch Adam Sandler.
Yeah, you pay the right person and you just stick in their niche and you're going to do fine. Adam Sandler, comedy movie. Got it. $73 million. Ryan Reynolds action movie where he just gets to be a sarcastic, smart ass rich dude for the whole time. Got it. 83 yeah. million people. Like, I was surprised the Irishman had 64 million, but even the article states that Netflix only claims them as views if somebody has watched 4 minutes or more. So how many people watched 20 minutes of Irishman and didn't get to the 210 minute mark at the end of it?
Yeah. Got like, we'll finish this one tomorrow and just never got to it.
But 64 million started it. And then there's a couple other movies in there. But in the end, it's just interesting to see.
Yeah, they've held this data really tight knit. Even the people that make these movies don't get to know these numbers.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to Rogan and stuff when they talk about the comedy specials. Netflix doesn't even let Rogan know how many people watched his fucking comedy special, which is kind of a little messed up.
It is. But yeah, you see that there's some big hitters on the list, and then by the time you get to the 10th most popular movie on Netflix, which was The Perfect Date at 48 million. So the vast majority obviously aren't hitting that 50 million plus total viewers. Most of them are probably in the single digit million views for their original.
Yeah, you kind of know some of these how much Netflix is buying them for. And we've talked before about Netflix's like total overhead costs. I just wonder if these numbers justify some of that shit. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it probably does in the sense that, you know, if 99 million people watched Extraction, the way they're looking at it is if you can do this, Netflix has stated that they want meaningful content every 2 weeks. They want an original movie, original show releasing every 2 weeks. And if they can get 99 million people to watch that within the first 4 days or 4 weeks of it coming out, then to those people, if 99 million people watch it, that's 99 million people who saw value in Netflix that month because they got a theater level movie for free along with everything else.
Yeah.
So I think that that's really what they're going to continue to hope for, is that it just justifies, you know, you not canceling your subscription because you know 3 weeks from now the next big show is coming out, or the next, you know, Umbrella Academy season's coming out or whatever else, but every 2 weeks something new should be coming up.
Well, I mean, and to tie into the story we're going to be talking about next, who knows what data they're selling along with these viewerships that they're able to sell to movie studios and things like that based on, you know, who watched what for how long. There's other ways to make money by tapping into the data. So maybe they're not just profitable off the viewerships and the subscriptions. I can see them being profitable off letting all these movie studios know exactly not just what people are watching, but why they're watching and how long they're watching.
How long they watched,
yeah.
How often they paused. Yeah, all of that stuff. But yeah, we can jump over the tech news. You know, that ends up entertainment there. We can jump over tech news with the article or topic you were talking about there. And it's just a follow-up. We talked a couple weeks ago, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about the Data Dividend Project when it first released. And to recap, Data Dividend Project is championed really by Andrew Yang, as he talked about it on the trail when he was trying to run for the Democratic primary and run for president. His whole focus was you should own your data. And you should get paid some level of data. People are profiting off of you, your metadata, your information. And we don't consent to it necessarily. We don't in any way gain from the proceeds of it. And these companies, the richest companies in the world today, all make money off of our data as their resource. So, you know, he started this Data Dividend Project. It follows really that California Consumer Privacy Act, trying to force these companies into a position where they have to get our consent to do it, and then hopefully pay us a dividend based off of how much that data is worth. There's been some articles that have come out. We just wanted to show both sides of it, where like Wired magazine came out and did an article that just talks about how like the numbers just don't make sense on data dividend project, that you can't actually, you know, Andrew Yang is talking about maybe, you know, maybe $20, maybe $100 a year, maybe these low values, you're not going to make $1,000 off your data. But even $20 per person coming out of Facebook, the article highlights that really Facebook claims that when you break it down by, you know, their profit per person, it only comes down to about $7 per person. So how could Facebook pay $20 million to anybody? How would that company continue to?
Yeah, I mean, but they also state that there isn't a completely quantifiable way to get this number yet. That we still don't know. Like you said, it could be in the range of 10 to 100. Well, that's a big fucking range, you know, and I like the fact that they're championing for the consumer, you know, but at the same time, they're going to have to do some work on nailing down exactly what profits are being driven from data and what percentage of those profits should the consumer be entitled to. Is it a perfect system yet? No, we're literally the ground floor of even talking about this. Like, nobody's getting paid from it yet. So how much they get paid shouldn't even be the question until we get to the point where everyone can agree that we should get paid. And then once we get to the agreement, like, no, there's billions of dollars being made off of people just living their lives behind their back in the shadows, they deserve at least some cut of it. Once we can agree on that, all right. Let's do the science. Let's do the math. Let's figure out what that total is, how it should be distributed, where it goes. Because at this point, like, I don't even care if they use it just as a tax to fund a UBI program, or if it just comes in a tax, like, hey, Facebook's making X amount of dollars off your data. You know, the consumer should get 20% of that. So we're going to put a 20% data tax on everything, and it goes back to the federal government and everybody, you know, we pay off our deficit. Like, I just want somebody to care about the consumer, and right now the DDP is the only one really giving a fuck.
Yeah, and that's where this is not gonna be life-changing money for anybody. I think, like, these articles that talk about the numbers don't make sense, is it even worth it? That's It's valuable and good criticism of the program. And this is where I think, you know, it's easy for Andrew Yang, it's easy for people to just talk about, oh, go get that money, and as the slogan towards these things. But it's far from why I care about it, because it's not going to be life-changing money. It's not that big a deal. The reason why I just like it is it'll be forced ethical behavior within the use of our data, in the sense that what I want is these companies to be in these forced arrangements with the data, the people that own the data, giving us ownership of the data, and puts them in a relationship with us where they're going to have to then use their data in a very transparent and ethical way, because without it, we then as consumers gain the ability to do class action lawsuits for breach of contract, for them violating our data rights and data. So it's not about the $20 a year. Well, about us being able to enforce some level of proper use and authorized use of our data.
Well, and partly the way I look at it too is, you know, I have a change jar in my kitchen that all the pocket change goes in. Granted, we're in a cashless society now, so the change jar doesn't get as filled as fast as it used to back when we were younger. But I have a change jar in my kitchen. If my neighbor was walking in my house and just taking a handful of quarters once a month, is it going to really affect my life? No. But would I stop him? Fuck yeah. Like, get your hands out of my change jar, motherfucker. Like, and to me, that's exactly kind of what it's like. You know, is Facebook's just grabbing some change out of your change jar every month. And like, oh, like, it's only a buck. You don't really notice a buck. Like, what do you care? I care, because it was my fucking buck to begin with. Like, no, it's not going to change my life. But like, as you said, is it ethical? Not in the slightest.
So it's still something. If you haven't gone to Data Dividend Project, DDP for All, or just the datadividendproject.com, to just check out what it is. Again, I say see beyond the the salesy side of it of, oh, you're going to get paid for your data. And I look at it as we're going to gain negotiating power with the companies that use our data, whether that be to negotiate for ethical behavior, which is what I hope, or for your $20 a year, whatever that happens to be. But either way, I believe in the benefits of it moving forward. But if you're
give it to me in Facebook stock. Give me a point. Give me 0.12 shares of Facebook stock every month for being a subscriber. I don't give a fuck. But you ain't taking my shit for free no more.
All right. Well, we can move on. That was just a quick follow up. But
Yang adjacent story.
Yeah, we can go over to a little bit of automation talk here. And White Castles, for those of you in parts of the country that don't have White Castles, those are those little mini slider burgers that everybody else has copied at this point in time.
Fuck your In-N-Out. Whitey's all day, son.
But White Castles is moving up their timeline to have these tests of these automated fry cooks called the Flippy line robots. And it's going to start doing just the fry cook running the fryer in White Castles. It also has the ability to learn and start running the actual grill, grilling the burgers. And they're going to start rolling this out in September as a test at some of the restaurants with the goal of using these automated fry cook systems within their kitchens across White Castles.
Yeah, you knew this was coming. You've seen the writing on the wall. It was only a matter of time. I'm not necessarily really opposed to this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't want humans to have to work in a White Castle's kitchen to support themselves for the rest of their lives. Like, that is not, just because these jobs exist doesn't mean that I want a large portion of society to have to do that kind of work to support themselves. It's not fulfilling. You know, like, White Castle's open 24/7. You know, you go at 4 a.m. after a long bender, and Whitey's is there to show you love. So, like, and Dolores in the back is not a happy worker. So I want Dolores to go home and get some sleep and find a meaningful job and just let a robot flip my sliders and hand me that bag at 4 a.m. I'm fine with that, you know, but the sad thing is that I know Dolores doesn't have many options to go to outside of the White Castles. So that's the point we're at in society, is that it's not that she's working at White Castles because she loves fried onions and getting the runs. Like, she works at she works at White Castles because that's her only option, and that is also shitty. So it's really scary when they put the robots in there, and, you know, now Dolores has got to figure out what the hell she's going to do with her life.
Well, White Castles has claimed that this will not in any way impact the number of employees at a restaurant, that this is just going to be additive.
Sure, and I shit rainbows after Whitey's.
I'll say bullshit with that one, but I think this is going to be eventually the future. I think we're still pretty damn far away from kitchens across America being ran by automated cooks, but it's definitely something that can be done if it's a routine task, like just picking up a fry basket and dropping it in a fryer and picking it up when a timer's over. Robots got that. That's not hard.
It's got it. Like, and that's what I mean. These in the burgers are tiny little squares. You just put a little spatula on the end of a robot arm. Like, I get it, man. I get it. We don't need to pay humans to do these jobs. Like, I totally understand that. I just hope that as we roll out these robots, we have people somewhere down the line figuring out what the hell these people are going to do for work after the days of the burger flipper. You know, it was always a slight jab at
unskilled, uneducated
workers. Like, oh, you can just go be a burger flipper. And it's like, nah. No, I can't. No.
Now you're just going to become, I don't know, the burger assembler. They're still talking about the humans are going to have to do the assembly of the burgers. So you just, instead of standing behind the grill, you just stand to the side and you just have the robot yell at you for not moving fast enough. I don't know.
there's just gonna be one dude sleeping in a chair inside of Whitey's, just making sure shit doesn't go haywire. You know, like just one dude to hit the all stop button when Flippy starts throwing burgers across the room on accident.
All right, well, I guess we can move on to the hacking news here, and we've got a huge hack that's we can talk about for a little while. And
smart people computers are just really bored during this quarantine, man. hacking stories have gone up at least 40-50%.
And if you haven't seen this latest one, I don't know where you were last week, but you know, you've got this massive Twitter hack, which was a call for Bitcoin, that if you donated Bitcoin, that these celebrities or whatever else the company that you were donating to was going to double your Bitcoin donation. And it just turned into a bunch of celebrities tweeting saying that they donated, that they gave their $1,000 in Bitcoin or whatever else and got it doubled. And the people, though, that were part of the hack, you know, you've got the largest Twitter account or as far as followers, Barack Obama doing it, Joe Biden, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, they picked some good accounts to tweet this from.
They did, and I think it ended up being like 130 total accounts, some of them being absolutely huge accounts that obviously these people, they weren't trying to be incognito about this. Right? They were trying to get away with these hacks for a long time. This was something that they had to have known was going to get caught pretty quickly when you start tweeting from President Obama's account, but it still gets retweeted throughout, and some people donated. In the end, the hit wasn't nearly as big as I thought it would be. 120,000.
So I have some thoughts on that. Okay, so one, the people that are most susceptible to these things are the very uneducated and the very elderly, right?
And like
which ones of them have fucking Bitcoin? Which ones of those fucking dolts have fucking Bitcoin? Okay, let alone Twitter accounts. Like the target audience for this hack was so minuscule. Like, so minuscule. I'm surprised they even got that much money, to tell you the truth.
I mean, you know, it's true. I don't know who would donate to this. Like, I cannot imagine a scenario where somebody.
So if you're some millennial that follows Elon or Obama and has a Bitcoin account and you saw it and you clicked it and you paid for it, shame on you. Shame on you. Where is your skepticism? You grew up in the days of these internet scams, and you should know better. Shame on you.
Like, yeah, it was absolutely wild to me when people, you know, when it was just being told that people were falling for it. And I was just thinking, like, really? You really thought that Barack Obama, the last president, and Joe Biden running for president, that if they're going to donate something, they're going to do it in non-US dollars, untradable Bitcoin? Like, are you kidding me right now?
We laugh and we, you know, it's so obvious to us. But if con artists and scams like this have proved everything, is that there is a large portion of the population that is just, they just want to believe in things like this. Like, I think it's something psychological. I'm sure there's some egghead that can really break this down and you know, explain the psychological need to have to give to these things. I've met old people. I know I've experienced, you know,
people that have
been scammed like this, that have been scammed with online messaging and given tens of thousands of dollars to people that they have never met.
Yeah.
You know, because of the need to want to believe what they're telling them. They have this desire, you know, like a lot of these kind artists, they scan obituaries for widows and widowers, and they wait and they prey on people that are getting life insurance policies or getting willed things, and they find that heartstring to tug on, and they get paid. And especially in the day and age of Facebook and stuff, where so much of your personal information is out there, they can, you know, Cambridge Analytica your ass and tailor make a custom sob story to tell you that you can relate to, because on your Facebook page they know you just lost your husband, you live in this area, you have this many family members, You're interested in these things. So therefore, based on this information, we're going to tell you that I'm a vet who lost his wife and has three children that I have to raise on my own now, and just jab you right in the gut with a fake sob story till you write a check. You know, so like, I just...
But this isn't that, right? This was the blanket phishing scam or whatever else that had no real emotional.
Well, they just appealed to everybody's greed. Give me $1,000 today, I'll send you $2,000 tomorrow. And I'm like, really?
it was a donation, right? They were asking people to donate $1,000 and they would double it. So these were people that actually thought they were doing good, just following their favorite celebrity or whatever else that tweeted it, which,
yeah,
I mean, you donated it. You're at the exact same financial point you thought you'd be, $1,000 less in your Bitcoin account, in your Bitcoin wallet. But it's a weird hack. But New York Times did an article where they gave a lot of information that is probably true on how the hack happened. And FBI and everybody else is still investigating it. Twitter's going to get destroyed by the FBI right now as far as trying to figure out how this could happen. Because, you know, a lot of politics, a lot of things take place within Twitter. You cannot just have the most secure. You've got to think there's got to be extra security on like Joe Biden's account, on Barack Obama's account, that it should not have been easy.
Well, that's the thing is, you hack Donald Trump's account, you could totally fuck the stock market in one tweet.
Yeah. And so there is some actual...
He does it all the time. He does it all the time.
There is some concerning actual threats that have come about from this. So the FBI is looking into it. But New York Times did a pretty good article talking to a bunch of people who do like SIM card swapping. And in the end, what they talked about was this hack was done through like an admin password, that there is like a god mode in Twitter that you can have access, manipulate accounts, do whatever, and it's just for employees. And the New York Times article states that they got the information on how to log into this god mode through their Slack channel. So Slack being like the like a corporate messaging system, it's used by a lot of companies. And apparently over at Twitter, they use Slack, and people who had the admin permissions actually created it within their Slack channel and like pinned it to the top as like, oh, here's the username and password for the admin if you need it, and pinned it within their messages. So Slack there's been a couple different like corporate events where Slack messages are not encrypted. They're not end-to-end encryption. It's just an open channel. So if you gain access to somebody's account, you gain access to all of the messages that are through it. So it's pretty well believed. The New York Times put it out there. It's probably accurate that there's an Twitter employee's Slack account got hacked, which allowed them access to this admin account. And then they were able to go in god mode and do whatever they wanted. And they just apparently picked these 130 accounts based off of popularity, based off of whatever. Some of the accounts they chose are like really weird. Like there was like a deceased rapper that they had in there. It's like you got Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and some deceased rapper nobody's heard of.
They probably, they probably just took the top followed accounts. They just probably looked at follower count, and how can we reach the most massive audience that we possibly can.
It's not that simple though. I didn't pull up the list of the 130 accounts, but some of them are just like weird. Like why did you take that 2,000 follower account and Barack Obama's account? Like, weird.
It's all about, I have to assume there's either no logic and it was just a bundle kind of thing that they did, or it was based on target audience. It's really the only thing that makes sense, when you're trying to do a massive tweet like this, because for every account it was the same tweet, right? It was just the call for donating and the Bitcoin link. So it just puzzles me. If the world has this much money to give away, how are some of the country's problems not being solved very easily? Yeah,
it was only 120,000.
Yeah, for this one, but when you look at the grand scheme of how much money people get conned out of every year, this was one scheme. There's thousands of them a year. When you quantify that money, it's like, really, we as a society just got all this money to just give away to scandalous ass fucking people that just because you feel like it. I don't get it. you know,
anyway, I think this was a good thing that actually happened. It was a fairly low cost, didn't scam a ton of people, fairly low hit. But yeah, it poses a huge issue within
Twitter. If I was Twitter, I'd refund that 120 grand to everybody and just thank them for the security test.
And you got to think, if you're Facebook, if you're like LinkedIn, if you're at these other companies, you're now like looking at what type of access you've given employees and what type of, you know, resources you've put into protecting these admin type accounts.
For me, good marketing for Twitter would be just to send us the receipt that you sent, you know, that you prove that you sent Bitcoin to that address. We'll refund you. Thank you for beta testing our security for us.
But in the end, we can move on to a couple other hacking topics here before we close out. But there's an article about Russian hackers trying to steal coronavirus vaccine research. As you know, the Russians are always trying to take something. It seems in our show, we're
constantly covering. Why do the research yourself when you could just steal it from everybody else?
I mean, I guess I'm not mad at them. they're constantly trying to steal intellectual property and other things. In this sense, all right, I get it. In the end, they're not going to be the first to the market with the vaccine. But I saw so many people in CNBC and all these other like financial type shows that are just talking about like, oh, even during a pandemic, we can't respect intellectual property or whatever else. And I thought, there's also an argument on the other side that like,
this should be open source anyways.
Even in a pandemic, we can't collaborate together to defeat the pandemic and everybody else still has to just...
This is fucking COVID, motherfuckers. This should be open source than a motherfucker right now.
So it was a weird argument for, you know, the capitalist side of things about how like the pandemic should have, you know, not made these companies not even have to worry about this. And it's like, well, or you could just argue that all of these great scientific minds probably should just be collaborating and racing to be the first one to the market to make the billions off of selling the coronavirus vaccine. But yeah, I mean, we don't live in that world.
If there's one thing that should be ran non-for-profit right now, it is goddamn COVID vaccine, okay?
That's not the world we live in.
No, it's not. Yay, capitalism.
So if the Russians are the first ones to hit the global market with a COVID vaccine, it probably wasn't.
I'm not gonna lie, like the way American capitalism works, I see myself being able to get a Russian vaccine before I'm able to get the American one. Let's put it like that. Like, when the American vaccine comes out, you know damn well it's going to be movie stars and athletes and politicians that get it while the rest of us are still wearing masks and locked in our house.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I live down in San Diego. I could just drive 30 minutes south into Mexico and probably get a vaccine faster.
That's what I'm saying. I got to take an 8-hour trip to Canada.
All right, and then one other, I guess, nation with a strong cyber program we haven't talked about in a while, but there was an article coming out of Forbes this week about there was a big leak through it was like a 90 gigabyte files that revealed a bunch of like Iranian hacking. Iran has a strong cyber program. They always did. When we talked about like back in January, I don't know if anybody can remember, like 2020 has been pretty nuts. If you go back to January, we had the Soleimani assassination, and which everybody thought was going to lead to a war with Iran. And we were even saying then that it's not going to lead to a war with Iran. It's going to lead to a cyber war. It's going to lead to it's almost like, you know, a cyber cult war. Iran's not going to go fight us. There's very little likelihood they're going to do that. But they had a strong cyber.
But they're going to try to fuck with us.
And they were
going to
start
hacking.
Yeah. And it's pretty well proven that they have significantly increased the amount of attempted attacks, cyber attacks since then. And this data leak just shows that to the extent at which they are doing some hacks, but it also shows some impressive, like within this leak was like their recruiting videos and training videos where they had videos to train their cyber operatives. And then they have some tools available to them that have kind of blown away people in the tech industry and the tech industry as far as like how fast they can completely pull out anything that's of value out of Google accounts. That if they can get access to your logins, if they can hack an account, how fast they can strip that down to anything that is meaningful through their automated ways of kind of scanning and picking through your emails, picking through your calendar, picking through everything else, and then just essentially creating profiles from stolen accounts.
Yeah, I mean, and this all goes back to a lot of our conversation with Bill Clay, our white hat hacker friend. There's going to be a lot of people that, like, this is never going to go away, and it is just about us being diligent in hiring the smartest and best people in our nation to protect us. Like, most of these, the people that would be best suited to protect us from hacks like this end up going into the private sector because the United States government is not willing to pay them the amount of money that it would take to secure them to protect our nation. So therefore, it all goes to private companies, and yet we need to shift some priorities in this nation, and a lot of them need to be shifted towards tech. You know, we're so slow moving the giant ship that is America towards the problems that are really affecting us in life. And this is another one of them that good luck, man. We're going to constantly be a decade behind all of this shit.
Yeah. I mean, we do have our own cyber programs and things that are pretty well funded. It's just, you know, we will probably be a bit slower to scale it compared to our adversarial nations. But you're right, this is not going away. Like, this is the future of all type cold wars. You know, the human cost of large scale warfare between developed nations is too great.
What's the exact definition of a cold war? Is it just where there's no body count or no humans involved?
Because
at some point, like, hackings and what, depending on what you do with these hacks, they can't be just looked at as Cold War, you know, tactics. Like, at some point, it's got to be actual acts of war. You know, like, if we can't protect ourselves through the data lines enough to stop these attacks, then we need other forms of deterrent, and blowing your shit up is always a good deterrent. Like, and sad to say, I am not for war, but at the same time, we need to protect our power grids, we need to protect our corporate data, we need to protect our information and our citizens from these foreign players. And if we can't do it through the tech alley, then we have to say, fine, if we catch you hacking, people gonna die and ain't gonna be Americans. Sorry about it. So stay the fuck out of our internet.
Yeah, it'll be a difficult thing. I don't think we've ever launched an actual lethal assault in response to a cyber threat or attack, but I could definitely see that happening, especially if things become sophisticatedly targeting infrastructure or critical essential services, stuff like that. But we don't have it yet. Curious on where the world will take us as this gets more and more aggressive. People keep dipping their toes deeper and deeper into this cyber attack realm. But we'll have to do an update again. We've talked about it several times with Bill or whatever else.
Yeah, we'll send out an email.
Figure out these things.
We got to send out an email.
But
it's been long enough. I'm sure he's got some other frightening stories now that relate to what's been going on in the world. He's always got some good ones.
All right. Well, speaking about being long enough, that's it for the episode here.
That's our hour.
91. And just want to thank you for listening for episode 91 of the Nerd Cantina Show. As always, please go ahead and take a moment to give us a rating, review, and share this with somebody who may find some interest in some of these topics we covered here today.
Yeah, and we like to thank everyone for listening. We're at episode 91. If you're expecting a big 100th episode blowout, don't hold your breath. We are greatly lacking in any big celebration for our 100th episode right now. You'll probably just get the news. So just keep tuning in. Thank you for listening to these 90 previous. We're going to keep going. We're inching up on 100. It's a big milestone for Ken and I. And we really appreciate everybody that hangs out at the Nerd Cantina /community. It's been a fun ride, and we're gonna keep going.
All right. Well, with that said, thanks again. Talk to you next week, nerds.
See ya.